The Solana community is getting an airdrop, and it looks to be absolutely massive. Jito is launching a governance token. It's called GTO. David, can you give us a recap of what Jito even is for folks that are unfamiliar? Bagless Nation, it's time for your Friday weekly roll-up. David, what are we talking about this week?
All of the news across all of the chains. Ryan, it's non-Ethereum airdrop week this week. Solana is getting a token, perhaps one of its biggest. Cosmos, Atom, getting a new token as well. What else is going on?
We got Kyber. They got hacked. This is one of DeFi's oldest protocols. So it's not good news, David. But you know the craziest thing? I don't know. Did you read the message from the Kyber hacker?
It is unhinged.
It is completely unhinged. So we got to talk about that. What else?
Some chains are getting some upgrades. Lots of more TPS coming into the fold. Say a layer one is getting an upgrade. A move layer two is coming to Ethereum, a new flavor of layer two on Ethereum. And also, a large Ethereum validator is starting to play shenanigans with the blockchain.
Uh-oh.
I'll tell you this story. Well, I think it's pretty cool.
And speaking of shenanigans, we got to give him an update on CZ. What's he doing this week? Is he still in the US? Is he somewhere else? And while we're talking about locations, where in the world is Richard Hart? That's what the SEC really wants to know right now. And if you're listening to this, wherever you're listening, make sure you give us a review, a like, if you rate it, subscribe if you're checking this out on YouTube. David, you know Spotify Wrapped.
It's Spotify Wrapped season. One of the best seasons to be a podcaster, I would say, is when you get all the appreciation.
Well, I saw somebody, I think the biggest Spotify Wrapped bankless listener moment, like minutes, was something like 14,000 minutes.
14,000 minutes. Yeah. So if you are listening to this on Spotify and you have more than 14,000 minutes on listening to Bankless, tweet at us. We will send you some swag. We'll send you something.
David, I did the numbers on that. 14,000 divided by 60 is something like 233
hours. 233
hours. Is that crazy or what? Have we done that many podcasts?
That's like 10 days. I think that's how math works.
10 days straight.
10 days of our voice. Wow. I'm sorry.
But also thank you. Mm-hmm. I mean, humbled and honored to have so many people listen to this podcast.
We do it for you. Do it for you.
We do it for you guys. We do it for you guys. Okay. David, speaking of things that we do for people, our friends and sponsors over at Near. This is super cool,
yeah,
actually.
We had a Twitter space with Ilya from Near where we got to ask a little bit more about this data availability layer.
Tell me about it.
You want to share screen? Like the way we've been expressing this is like, Near data availability. Near is a layer one. It is also supplying data availability to Ethereum layer twos, which is exactly what's happening. There's just like a bunch of second order, very positive second order effects that come with this. And that is cross-chain composability for Ethereum layer twos. They've also been working with Eigenlayer for fast finality. And Ryan, you know, I've been talking to you about this. I'm like on a quest to understand how Ethereum rollups become recomposed. Like eventually we need Ethereum to just become invisible. And that means whether your assets are on like Optimism or Arbitrum or like future chains, all of that needs to be abstracted away. How does that happen? What is the mechanism for doing that? One of the silver bullets for getting that done is like low latency finality, which is how chains can talk to each other. This Near DA, along with their partnership with Eigenlayer, is helping achieve some of that. And so this is one of the reasons why like I'm really excited about what Near has been up to. They announced this about like 2 weeks ago. Anyways, there is a link in the show notes. That is bankless.cc/near if you want to learn more about Near's data availability solution and how they are bringing cross-chain composability to Ethereum.
And thanks to Near for getting this message out to the Bankless Nation. David, let's talk about prices. You ready for this?
Yeah, so like the prices have just up all like month. When you measure it for the last 7 days, it's actually just flat, but that's like a, you know, measurement error. Bitcoin's up 1% on the week, 37,300 where it started, 37,700 where we're ending. Ether price also relatively flat. 20.30 to start.
That works.
20.30 to end. Pretty flat on the week. And then the ETH BTC ratio also pretty flat on the week. And also no major big movers of the week. I mean, like IOTA had a big pump, but honestly, who cares?
What do you think of December? Do you think December's going to be good to us? You think I remember some Decembers in crypto have been very bleak and it felt like coal in my stockings. December 2019 may have been this. However, yes. December 2020 was not bleak.
Huge.
It was very happy.
That was the month in which we had like 6 months of why do you need ETH? You just buy Bitcoin and DeFi tokens after yes. like DeFi summer. That was the month. I remember we were talking about this actually, and we were talking about this take on the weekly roll up, and you're like, what do you think about that take? And I'm like, well, it really just takes one strong week of price movement in Ether.
Wait, you're saying we were talking about this in 2020?
Yeah.
You remember an episode from 2020?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because
That feels like decades ago.
Yeah, right. So, like, we were talking about that thesis, and the, like, what do you think about the thesis? About, like, the barbell of no Ether, just Bitcoin and DeFi tokens. And I was like, yeah, sure, that's, like, the narrative that's in vogue in the moment, because that's what the price action has been. But all that really is, that could just be very quickly invalidated by a massive ETH run.
Yeah.
And then, literally the next week, Ether broke out of its like 3-year bear market range and broke through to $425, which hadn't broke through in forever. And then it ran to like $700, and the narrative just completely flipped. And
was that 2020 or did that happen in 2019?
No, that's 2020. That's 2020. That was December of 2020. Because by the January of 2021, Ether had broken by $1,100 in the first week. I remember this very, very well. It was like $1,100 in the first week, and we were on our way to $2,000, and like the whole barbell idea looked super cringe in hindsight. And it was when ultrasound money really became a huge thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good times, David.
Good times.
We'll see if Santa Claus is coming to town this month. I'm hoping for good things. I think we've got a fantastic setup. We'll finish this out. Tell us, what's the cryptocurrency market cap?
$1.48 trillion. We are narrowing in on $1.5 trillion in market cap, but we're not there yet.
Do you want to give us some perspective on all of this? So when you say stuff like $1.5 trillion, mm-hmm. right? That sounds like a very large number, but here's a tweet giving some context on the size of the entire crypto industry relative to another asset that probably many of us know. What's this tweet?
Yeah, so this is a tweet from a chameleonaire, works at Serotonin, a dear friend of mine. She tweets out, "Daily reminder that the entire crypto industry is still a small boy by market cap. At our peak in autumn of 2021, at the peak of the bull market of last cycle, we were equivalent, the whole industry was equivalent to the market cap of Apple. Not a small company, but it's insane to think that like a industry about crypto networks that's disrupting money and finance itself is equivalent to an equity. We're still small. It's still
early. You remember when you asked me what my prediction was for the cycle for the market cap? I'm still going to stick with it. Do you remember what I said? 12 trillion on the low side, 12 to 15 trillion. Was my number.
Yeah, okay, so we got a 10x in market cap ahead of us.
What's your number?
Ooh, gosh.
You can't.
I'm going with 10.
Yeah. Your gas, I'm brakes, but gas is under my prediction.
Like, if you do the whole log curve, like cycles are always smaller. Yeah, and we have higher interest rates now.
All right, you might be right. Are you counting like stable coins? Real world assets.
Yeah, I'm counting the number that is reported by CoinGecko in the banner that it reports it in. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough. We will see. Either way, pretty bullish. And speaking of bulls, can you get any more bullish on a particular asset than Michael freaking Saylor, who just put in another acquisition of a cool 16,000 Bitcoin? If you're curious, I could do the math for you. That's about $600 million
worth of Bitcoin. Shut up. You're not doing math. You're reading this tweet. Get out of here.
Well, I'm doing the math for them. I didn't say I was doing the math myself. At an average price of $36,000 per Bitcoin. So there he is. He's just continuing with that dollar cost averaging in strategy. But these numbers are huge, David.
Huge numbers. Where does he get the number from? Like, first off, congrats on Michael Saylor for having the first major purchase of Bitcoin where the reported average price of Bitcoin is significantly under the actual current price. Usually it was the inverse. Where does he get all this money from? Where does he just start pulling $600 million out of his pockets? Well, okay, so the answer is leverage. It's leverage. And so when Bitcoin goes up in price, MicroStrategy stock, MSTR, it's basically a Bitcoin like ETF in a roundabout way because like the value, like it's a stock, it's a software company, it sells software, but really it's just about exposure to Bitcoin. So when Bitcoin pumps up to $38,000, all of a sudden MicroStrategy trades at a much larger premium, goes up in price, and all of a sudden he can borrow against it to buy more Bitcoin. So he's just taking, he's just winding himself up.
David, why don't we do that? We got a little media company. We'll go public. We'll have Bankless as a publicly traded asset. Yeah. We'll just buy a dollar cost average every single week into Ether.
Uh-huh. And just announce it. Yeah. Like we'll start small, but we'll just wind our way up and we'll end up big.
We'll just take some debt.
It's just free money, right? We're just printing money, right? And there's no risk.
Honestly,
there.
It's a fantastic business model, I think. So long as Bitcoin continues to go up. But, you know, we've already given our takes on that. We think it will. But did you see this tweet? Dude, actually, I know you did because you sent this to me. What Icebergy giving a take on what Saylor's doing? Because I don't know if you've read, if you looked at Saylor's Twitter feed recently, but it's stuff like this.
Yeah, he just types
this
in
Midjourney.
He goes into Midjourney and goes like, imagine, which is how you prompt Midjourney. It's like slash imagine Bitcoin to the moon. And then he just like posts it and gets
Bitcoin to the mountaintops.
Gets like 10,000 likes on Twitter. Just like these stupid AI generated things.
Look at this. Show me a picture of America Eagle.
An American eagle with a Bitcoin on. Grasping Bitcoin.
And that's what you get. And he just pumps them. And these tweets do so well,
they
David.
Do
look at this.
So well.
Almost 10,000 likes for this like just robot Midjourney thing. Like, I'm going to be honest, low effort Midjourney artwork.
So low effort. It doesn't matter.
What's the take from
Icebergy? Just tweets out, Taylor starts T-whopping half a yard on Coinbase, does a line, then immediately goes to Midjourney and types imagine Bitcoin to the moon 4 hours.
Oh my God. I don't know if that's what he's doing, but I do picture that in my head.
I mean, bro, do you remember the super unhinged like clip we played like 2 weeks ago? I was like, how many chairs are you sitting on right now? It's like when people's like, why don't you diversify out of Bitcoin? And he goes like, well, how many chairs are you sitting on?
Implying, are you sitting on one chair?
Are you sitting on one chair? Like there's only one asset.
Are you sitting on 10? I love it. All right, GBTC, give me an update on this. Yeah. Record lows, a discount? What are we talking about here?
Record lows for discount. So in June, the discount was like negative 40 of this year for Bitcoin, the Bitcoin spot discount for GBTC, now at just 8.6%.
That's closing. Yeah, and what was our prediction? That will continue to close. And once it does, what will spill over into the spot price?
As it approaches closing, people are just more likely to buy spot in the first place because the incentive is lessened. So as we are approaching zero, just all of that demand is going into spot, which is bullish. Yeah.
You know what's after December, David, is January.
That's how
and
that
in
works.
January, I was promised a Bitcoin spot ETF. Mr.
Right.
James Seifert.
Well, that's what I'm going to go do when I go climb my mountains in the first week of January. That is the plan.
So, okay, you're climbing mountains in January.
Yep.
The first 2 weeks of January?
First week of January.
Okay, so it's very likely, Bankless Nation, that Gary Gensler is going to take a massive L and have to give us the Bitcoin spot ETF while David's in the mountains.
Yeah. I got to go to the mountains because that's where he has the Horcrux, the Bitcoin ETF Horcrux. I have to go smash.
This is a down bad story, David. Yeah. And these numbers are pretty stark. This is from Kumar. OpenSea revenue, January 2022. Speaking of January, that was not too long ago. Their revenue was $387 million. That's monthly revenue for OpenSea.
Monthly.
Top of the NFT cycle, January 2022. You know what it is today? I know you do because you're looking at it. But Bankless listener, imagine you go from 387 million to now, last month, 1.9 million. Wow. That's a big drop, David.
Well, hey, like $1.9 million a month is a lot of money. I don't want to belittle that. That's still a lot of money.
No, that's a lot of money.
It's just a lot less. It came down so hard. Okay, so like why did this happen? Well, the NFT market just dried up, obviously. Easy come, easy go. NFTs totally not dead. They'll be around forever, of course. It's just like that was the first mania. And so like that was them selling picks and shovels of a tulip mania, right? And so that's, they were making all their revenue then. And so, you know, actual demand for NFTs have dropped off, but then also, OpenSea has been disrupted by Blur. And so their market share back then was like 90%+. And now it's only like 35%. So the revenue from the industry has disappeared and they're also taking only a third of it. So between those two things,
it's they're doing fine at 2 million a month. That's fantastic. Like that would be a fantastic business. What's difficult about crypto is this whipsaw. And Bankless listener, you know, because you hold these whipsawing assets and the volatility of them. But if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a project trying to start this, you see 400 million in revenue and you're like, hey, even if that goes down 80%, Mm-hmm. Like, we can hire another 100 people, 200 people. Right. Like, there's market demand for this. It's growing. And then you get this, the other side, when all of this crashes.
Yeah, it goes, doesn't go down 80%. It goes down 98%.
Oh, it's difficult to ride out these markets. So, you know, that's why the key thing to do in crypto, whether you're running a project or whether you're an entrepreneur, whether you're a startup, or whether you're a lowly holder, is just to hang on for the ride. You know, don't get liquidated. That's the key to survival, as we say so often.
I did just do the math just now. Well, yeah, I'm bad at math, so I don't know if I did it right. But 387 million down to 1.9 million is 98%.
I mean, that's what a lot of assets you got a 98% hit too. Yeah. David, what do we got coming up next?
Coming up next, a bunch of news. We're going to start with the Jito airdrop. I mean, it's governance token on Solana. I think Solana is by far biggest airdrop of a very like esteemed protocol. And also, Cosmos Hub is having a civil war. It's entering its, you remember the block size wars of Bitcoin? I think that's what's going on with Cosmos Hub. So an airdrop, what does that mean for a chain split for Atom holders? We're going to talk about that. But first, a moment to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially Kraken, our preferred exchange for crypto in 2023 and 2024. If you do not have an account with Kraken, consider clicking the link in the show notes, getting started with Kraken today. Kraken knows crypto. Kraken's been in the crypto game for over a decade, and as one of the largest and most trusted exchanges in the industry, Kraken is on the journey with all of us to see what crypto can be. Human history is a story of progress. It's part of us, hardwired. We're designed to seek change everywhere, to improve, to strive. And if anything can be improved, why not finance? Crypto is a financial system designed with the modern world in mind. Instant, permissionless, and 24/7. It's not perfect, and nothing ever will be perfect. But crypto is a world-changing technology at a time when the world needs it the most. That's the Kraken mission, to accelerate the global adoption of cryptocurrency so that you and the rest of the world can achieve financial freedom and inclusion. Head on over to kraken.com/bankless to see what crypto can be. Not investment advice. Crypto trading involves risk of loss. Cryptocurrency services are provided to U.S. and U.S. territory customers by Payward Ventures Inc. PVI, doing business as Kraken. You know Uniswap as one of the largest decentralized protocols with over $1.7 trillion of trading volume, but Uniswap is becoming so much more. Uniswap X is the newest product from Uniswap Labs, which aggregates liquidity across the ecosystem to give you the best DeFi trading experience. The best part? It's gas-free and MEV protected. The best prices? Zero gas and MEV protection all rolled into one app. So head over to app.uniswap.org, click the gear icon on the swap page, and make sure that Uniswap X is toggled on. And if zero gas trading on Uniswap wasn't enough for you, the Uniswap app is now available on both iOS and Android. Start swapping seamlessly with products from the most trusted team in DeFi. Visit app.uniswap.org to get started today. Arbitrum is the leading Ethereum scaling solution that is home to hundreds of decentralized applications. Arbitrum's technology allows you to interact with Ethereum at scale with low fees and faster transactions. Arbitrum has the leading DeFi ecosystem, strong infrastructure options, flourishing NFTs, and is quickly becoming the Web3 gaming hub. Explore the ecosystem at portal.arbitrum.io. Are you looking to permissionlessly launch your own Arbitrum Orbit chain? Arbitrum Orbit allows anyone to utilize Arbitrum's secure scaling technology to build your own Orbit chain, giving you access to interoperable, customizable permissions with dedicated throughput. Whether you are a developer, an enterprise, or a user, Arbitrum Orbit lets you take your project to new heights. All of these technologies leverage the security and decentralization of Ethereum. Experience Web3 development the way it was always meant to be: secure, fast, cheap, and friction-free. Visit arbitrum.io and get your journey started in one of the largest Ethereum communities.
The Solana community is getting an airdrop, and it looks to be absolutely massive. Jito is launching a governance token. It's called GTO. David, can you give us a recap of what Jito even is for folks that are unfamiliar?
Jito is a project on a Solana that is one of these like app layer projects that actually has to do with the Solana chain itself. So it's like these app infra projects. Jito Sol is like the staked ETH version. So Lido, we have staked ETH on Ethereum, Jito Sol on Solana. But it's not just that. It's also MEV extraction as well. So you can run the Jito client to get the MEV trading done, like and built, kind of like the block proposer system of Ethereum. And so it combines MEV extraction plus the staked Sol and then it combines that in together to optimize your SOL yield. And this is called the Jito network, the Jito client.
And all right, so it's like when you said MEV Boost, that is a product from Flashbots that basically helps to create a marketplace for all of the MEV buying and selling on top of Ethereum. And Jito does something similar for Solana.
It democratizes access to MEV rewards. So instead of actually giving it to the most of it to MEV extractors, it gives it to people who just run the clients. And now and Jito now puts it into the Jito token. So it's, plus, it's spreading out MEV capture on Solana.
So it's that, and plus it's also Lido, as you said, for Solana.
Yes, exactly.
You could stake. So
you can imagine why the Solana community is very stoked about this. It's like, you know, a very deep integration with the Solana system itself.
And how deep is the airdrop? Does it go to everybody, or like who gets this?
Yeah, so probably some more granular distributions into internal Jito community members, but really the big one is if you are a holder of the Jito SOL token, which is like the staked ETH or our ETH of Ethereum, but for Solana, if you hold Jito SOL, so because you're getting the yield of Solana in Jito SOL, then you're getting airdropped. That's probably the big one. There's other ones as well. 10% of the total supply is being airdropped to its community members.
Fun fact for you, David, the ETH maximalists over at Bankless, you know, Bankless, right? Guys. They've got a airdrop hunter, and they actually predicted Jito, and they predicted the drop of Jito, and
So people using the ETH Maxi product got the Solana airdrop.
That's right.
Wow.
Bankless.com/airdrop hunter, and you would have known about that in advance, David. Fortunately, I didn't because I didn't actually take the time to use this fully. David, let's talk a little bit about Cosmos. So we talked about Solana and their airdrop, but we also said that the Cosmos community is getting some sort of a new token. Tell me about this. I used to be pretty active in the Cosmos community back in the day.
Yeah, so Cosmos is entering its block size wars era. Block size wars is this era in Bitcoin in which like there was this civil war between the big blockers and the small blockers. And it fractured into Bitcoin and Bitcoin Cash. It was the largest split of Bitcoin ever. And Bitcoin Cash was like decently relevant for a while. And it's just like slowly faded off into irrelevance.
Can I ask you something about this? But so when you say the block size wars, it wasn't just about the size of blocks, was it? It was about something a bit more fundamental in terms of like what Bitcoin was supposed to be. Was it supposed to be this store of value asset? Or was it supposed to be this like kind of payment network? Is Cosmos actually having a war of block size, or is it about some fundamental philosophical divide here?
It's a philosophical divide. It's not about the size of blocks on the Atom chain, but it is about like what is the identity of the Cosmos hub, the Atom token. And so it's like kind of the fractal equivalent, right? And so it's not about size of blocks. It's more about, it is about the moneyness conversation though. So the block size wars for Bitcoin was like, well, small blockers are like Bitcoin is a store of value, and big blockers are like Bitcoin is a payments network. Mm-hmm. Store of value people won. Payment networks is Bitcoin Cash. That's completely relevant now. Cosmos is entering a similar phase in which the token of Atom, it's like, what is the purpose of Atom? Is it meant to secure Cosmos, or is it the money of Cosmos? And this is the divide that is happening right now in Cosmos. And there is, unlike Bitcoin, there is a on-chain voting for Cosmos. So we actually get to see these votes show up and take place. And that vote did take place. And so the question is the Atom token good collateral for DeFi? Or is it meant to only serve the security of the Atom hub? And this was the vote that happened. And this is a question of inflation. How much do we inflate the Atom currency? And so this vote went through to cap the inflation of Atom at 10%. Right now it's at about 14%+. And the vote was to lower inflation and to cap it. So it only inflates so much over time at 10%. That vote went through and passed. And so the, not by a crazy amount, like there was a clear division in the community. It was 41% supported it and 32% voted against it. So like
that's really close.
A clear victory that shows a very strong division in the community, right? And 80% of the validators participated. It wasn't like binary. And so now Atom, the token, will be capped at 10%. What does this do? How do we like analyze what this means for the Atom ecosystem? Here's something that was helpful to analyze this. People out here are thinking that lower inflation equals less supply equals higher Atom price, and they are voting yes. The other camp is saying lower inflation doesn't affect price and are voting no. Meanwhile, traders big and small are like, oh, yield is going down. Maybe I should move Atom into DeFi. Atom liquidity goes up. Atom DeFi strategies become more reliable and DeFi protocols start earning more revenue. Basically, lowering inflation takes away Atom from staking and incentivizes it to be more productive in DeFi because they are lowering the productivity of Atom as a staking asset because yields are lower.
It's becoming more like money. It's
becoming more like collateral.
Like Ethereum has gone through this. Remember minimum viable issuance, right? Decreasing the issuance all the time until we kind of put a permanent monetary policy in place that is based on demand for block space and the amount of staking, and turned Ether into a much more of monetary type of unit that accrues value. And this a similar type of conversation is happening in Cosmos, right?
That's exactly right. Jay Kwan, who is the founder, one of the main core founders of Cosmos, wrote the Tendermint white paper, like built IBC. He is not pleased. So this is like the Satoshi, if you will, the original inceptor of Cosmos, so the guy, and is like, I don't agree with this vote.
My understanding too, David, is he's been kind of checked out of the Cosmos community for the last couple of years. He's been kind of on the periphery, not as actively involved. So that's some other context going into this, I believe.
Sure. So Jay Kwan says, despite the vote passing, which is something not too surprising, it would be good to know whether the later votes came from newly purchased Atoms or not. Now, let's coordinate a split, he says.
He's like, wow.
Yo, that's great. Great for you guys. You guys do you. I'm forking. And so Jay Kwan is going to fork Atom, and now there's going to be Atom 1, like Atom number 1, as in you're going to make a new Atom, Cosmos hub, and it's going to be the one that doesn't support Atom as money and instead optimizes for chain security by issuing high yields, high inflation for Atom holders who stake, which is how you get high security.
I don't understand how that gives you high security, though.
Because it incentivizes all the Atom to stake to the Atom hub.
Yeah, but if the value of your Atom is lower, then the economic security is lower.
And that's why we are ETH maxis, brother.
I mean, it's just, this is an argument we've had for a long time.
We've done this before. That was
many
times. All of last cycle.
Bitcoin did this. Ethereum certainly did this. And the core argument was, if you are a layer one and you're trying to optimize for
security
economic
comes from money.
Yeah. Then what you have to do is also, if you want to fully optimize for security, you have to fully optimize to have your layer one assets be a monetary instrument and be a money. And actually, that's one of the things that kind of pulled me away from the Cosmos community is I was just like, I don't understand how atoms accrue value in this world. And
yeah, because
like,
y'all keep on inflating it into infinity. Inflating it 14% a year, bro.
Well, the answer is always, it's not money, it's something else. And what is moneyness really anyway? And if we need money, we'll just import Bitcoin into our system. And like, if you do that, you won't have economic security to actually support all of the things that you... It was just a circular argument. And it sounds like now the debate is being settled the crypto way, which is fork choice.
Fork choice,
you get to decide. So I haven't seen a good old-fashioned fork in a very long time, David.
This is a good
Remind me
this
what
is a
happens.
Good fork. Yeah.
All right,
oh,
so...
Yeah, okay.
I have some Atom tokens.
Back to our
I get Atom 1?
You get Atom 1. If you are an Atom token holder, your blockchain is just going to split in two. The historical state will be copied, and then you'll have both Atom and Atom 1. It should be called Atom 2, but I get it.
It's Atom Classic.
Atom Classic, yeah. Jay's vision, yeah. if this fork does happen, you'll have Atoms on both chains, and one will have more value than the other. And one,
the market will decide.
The market will decide, and one will likely. I'm like, bro, like Jay, I love the philosophy, man, but like, you're gonna lose to money. Like, capital begets capital, liquidity begets liquidity, governance begets governance. Like, you're gonna lose. Like,
well, I just feel like we've seen this experiment play out with forks enough times, and but who knows? Maybe this time it's a little bit different. And the Cosmos community, to be fair, is a little bit different, than other communities. So. Right. I don't know, but I'm pretty excited about getting those fork tokens with my Atom 1. And can't wait to hit sell because it's not money. Sorry, Jay. I mean, bankless listener, you do whatever you
know
think.
You know our stance on this whole thing. At some point, when do our theses just become just like, if this plays out the way that the bankless thesis about money and layer ones plays out, I declare that it is no longer a thesis and it's just correct.
No, no. We're going to retest that every single cycle. Oh, we're going to, for infinity, infinity cycles. We got to retest all our assumptions when, every single cycle. Okay, this last thing. Remember
speaking,
we talked
speaking
about
learning.
Yeah, speaking about learning lessons. What was the learning lesson for Paradigm? We talked about this new layer two that had some
pyramid new, scheme. Not layer two. It's not a layer
two. Oh, it's not a layer two. This multi-sig calling itself a layer two called Blast, which was basically pyramid scheming the whole thing. Like, I'll use this term, ponzifying everything it
incentives,
could.
Yes.
Incentives, right?
Incentive ponzis, yeah.
Not necessarily bad, not necessarily good. I'm personally neutral on that. It's a growth mechanic. Yeah. Like, you have to understand that it comes with risk and all sorts of things. Right. And, you know, easily up, easily down.
It doesn't really come with risk because, like, you're depositing your assets in and then like other people get like rewarded more if they referred you in the issuance of new Blast tokens rather than paying new incoming money being paid to support old money. That's the true Ponzi. No one's ether is being like redistributed. It's just the Ponzi incentives of Blast tokens are the Ponzi.
What I mean is risk to the ecosystem in that like it's cocaine, man. It's a sugar rush. And so you shoot all the way up. And then you know what's going to happen. It's going to come crashing down at some point in time because it's not. Anyway, that aside, the bigger issue we talked about last week was it's not actually a layer two. It's a multi-sig of some sort.
And even worse, it's a one-way multi-sig. You can't withdraw.
And so, David, we are on a Dune Analytics board, and I am seeing some numbers here that are very big. How much value is actually locked in Blast at this point?
$620 million has been deposited to Blast.
Is that product market fit?
On a 3 of 5, one-way multi-sig that's not a layer two, and then being advertised as a layer two. And so, like, at this point, it's just like, why do layer twos go do these engineering challenges?
Why do we do the hard stuff?
Bytecode EVM equivalents and like distributed sequencers. Like, why are we doing the hard stuff? You're getting $600 million for being a 3 of 5 multi-sig that you can't withdraw from. Like, it's just an insult to all the actual hard engineering teams out there.
I guess Anyways. So. I mean, my take is it's just a shortcut. But anyway, a lot of money has piled into this, right?
And for comparison, that is the equivalent of the entire TVL of Solana.
What?
Yeah.
They did the entire TVL of Solana in a week?
Yeah, a couple of weeks, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Well, there we go. That's a lot of money that's already been injected in this. And I got to imagine most of this is ETH. Yeah, look at this.
It's ETH and stables, yeah, but mostly ETH.
Yeah, Ether is just so massive. Okay, so Paradigm has been associated with this project because they're invested, a key investor in this project. They were also a key investor in Frentech, right? So they're starting to get this reputation of like, if you want your token to go up, if you want to experiment with these, you know, Ponzi economics, Paradigm's the name, right? And so like Paradigm plus new project equals number go up, token go up, TVL go up. Paradigm, it looks like, is trying to distance itself maybe a little bit from that. And we've had Dan Robinson on before.
Great
we
guy.
Think very highly of many of the folks at Paradigm and many of the research that they do, much of the research that they do and the projects that they support. Georgios, we could go on with some fantastic
couldn't say better
people.
Words.
Okay, so what is Dan saying here? What's the gist of this?
Yeah, so he goes, there are a lot of components of Blast that I'm excited about and would be interested in engaging with people to work on. That said, we at Paradigm think that the announcement this week crossed lines in both messaging and execution. What we don't agree with is the decision to launch the bridge before the layer two. So you launch the deposit contract before the network exists and then also not allow withdrawals for 3 months since we...
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah, you can't get your money out of that, huh?
Right. Dan says it sets a bad precedent for other projects. Yeah. To draw another lesson out in history, like why did BlockFi go under? Why did Genesis go under? Because Alex effing Mashinsky was doing an actual Ponzi and paying ridiculously high yields. And so all of the legitimate competition had to be dragged into the cesspool of like fraud and illegitimacy because of one player who was playing unfairly. And so this is what Dan is saying. It's like, it's a bad precedent. Like, they're incentivizing deposits. The network's not live. It's a one-way multi-sig. It's a bad precedent. Don't encourage this behavior. So
yeah,
I'm pretty proud of Dan for making this statement.
Even if Blast isn't doing this, right, it's the bad precedent is the key language here because this is like, trust me, bro, security.
Right.
And we already had that. We had that with all of the crypto banks, and we don't need that again. So even if Blast doesn't screw people over,
right,
the next project to follow this new well-trodden path that kind of works from a growth perspective totally will and totally could. What else does he say here? Because this is interesting. This is a investor basically throwing some shade at a set of founders that they invested in.
It's a VC publicly like denouncing the actions of one of their portfolio
companies.
You don't
typically see that.
Generally, you don't. That's generally a no-no. Which means that it's really egregious, bro. There's also emphasis on Pac-Man, who is the founder of Blur, who's now also the founder of Blast, who's really been like the guy leading this execution of these strategies, really leaning into the gamification thing. And this guy's like 24. He's like had like this crazy history, like just operator of operators. I think he's gone too far. I think he should reel in a little bit and become a little bit more tame. We have seen when people go too far in crypto. I don't want him to follow that path.
Well, that's what the social layer of crypto is telling them. The non-existent social layer, I believe. I think Paradigm was maybe on the hot seat a little bit more than Bankless last week, but it was between Paradigm and Bankless.
you know who else needs to reel it in? Those goddamn Bankless guys. Submitting proposals.
Well, you're welcome, Paradigm, for absorbing some of the heat for you guys. We're happy to do that. Anyway, don't want to revisit memory lane. We did a whole episode on this. What do we got coming up next?
Someone is up to some shenanigans with the Ethereum blockchain, playing some timing games with blocks being added to the chain. We'll talk about what that means. Also, where in the world is Richard Hart? If you know, the SEC would like
give him a phone number.
Call Gary because the SEC would like to know exactly where Richard Hart is. And also, the Kyber network is exploited for $55 million. And now the exploiter wants to take control of the company. I don't know if it works that way, but apparently he does. We're going to get into all of these stories and more. But first, a moment to talk about these fantastic sponsors that make this show possible, especially MetaMask and its new spiffy MetaMask portfolio. If you have not opened up your MetaMask portfolio, it's pretty cool. Check it out. There is a link in the show notes. MetaMask portfolio is your one-stop shop to navigate the world of DeFi. And now bridging seamlessly across networks doesn't have to be so daunting anymore. With competitive rates and convenient routes, MetaMask portfolio's bridge feature lets you easily move your tokens from chain to chain, using popular layer 1 and layer 2 networks. And all you have to do is select the network you want to bridge from and where you want your tokens to go. From there, MetaMask vets and curates the different bridging platforms to find the most decentralized, accessible, and reliable bridges for you. To tap into the hottest opportunities in crypto, you need to be able to plug into a variety of networks, and nobody makes that easier than MetaMask Portfolio. Instead of searching endlessly through the world of bridge options, click the bridge button on your MetaMask extension or head over to metamask.io/portfolio to get started. Introducing GMX V2, the deepest on-chain futures market to trade Bitcoin, Ethereum, and leading altcoins. With the launch of GMX V2, enjoy the best of both worlds. Lightning fast trade execution, competitive pricing without having to compromise on custody. With 150 billion trades settled on-chain and over 500 million in liquidity across Arbitrum and Avalanche, GMX is the preferred destination for DeFi traders and community liquidity providers. Right now, over $12 million in Arbitrum grants are being distributed to traders, LPs, and developers building on GMX V2. There's never been a better opportunity to experience the future of crypto trading. GMX and its ecosystem of integrations continue to move us forward. Your wallet, your trades, your choice. Trade on GMX with the exclusive Bankless discount code in the show notes and benefit from 10% lower fees. Try it out now at app.gmx.io. Celo is the mobile-first, EVM-compatible, carbon-negative blockchain built for the real world. And now, something big is happening. Introducing the Celo Layer 2. It's a game-changing proposal that's going to bring Celo's rapidly growing ecosystem home to Ethereum. Vitalik has shared his excitement for the Celo Layer 2 on the Celo forum, so has Ben Jones from Optimism. But why? The Celo Layer 2 will bring huge advantages, like a decentralized sequencer, off-chain data availability, and one-block finality. What does all that mean? Rock-solid security, a trustless bridge to Ethereum, and more real-world use cases for Ethereum without compromise. And real-world adoption is happening. Active addresses on Celo have grown over 500% in the last 6 months. With the Celo Layer 2, gas fees will stay low, and you can even pay for gas using ERC-20 tokens. But Celo is a community-governed protocol. This means that Celo needs you to weigh in and make your voice heard. Join the conversation in the Celo forum. Follow at Celo.org on Twitter and visit Celo.org to shape the future of Ethereum.
David, you promised us shenanigans. Tell us about the shenanigans.
Oh, I got shenanigans for you. Here's a tweet from Tony, who works at the EF, and he says, P2P.org announces he is not associated with P2P.org. P2P.org announces that it will call get header later in this slot. These are technical terms. Trading off chain stability against more MEV profit. This is exactly the centralized behavior that we should not tolerate as long as we, as users, have the choice about where to stake our assets. Okay, what is going on? This is something that
I'm an Ethereum. I feel like I should know what this tweet means. I have no idea.
Yeah. So this was something that was predicted once as something that is possible to do by this guy, Casper, who also works at the EF, as well as a few other people who put this paper together called Time is Money, Strategic Timing Games in Proof of Stake Protocols. Every once in a while, I do put on my research hat and open up some research papers. So I read this one. It's actually pretty good. There's a big mathy section that I skipped. but basically, if you go down to slide 8, page 8, Ryan,
yeah.
It really shows you went past it. Up.
Am I an Ethereum researcher
right there,
now?
Right there. Cool. Okay, so this is showing, this is the x-axis. Is that the horizontal axis?
Cut that, editors.
The x-axis is the flat one, right? And so that's time. And then the y-axis is level of ether extraction based off of time.
Yes.
If, Ryan, it is your turn to propose a block, you have 8 seconds, 12 seconds or something, some number of seconds to propose that block before you are late and you get minorly penalized for being late and not proposing a block. If you, usually people, honest behavior and just like not playing any timing games, when it comes time to propose a block, you just propose it, right?
Yeah.
You're collecting the transactions, you put them all together, you get the header of the block, which has all the transactions in it, and then you propose it.
It's because I'm an honest validator. That's what I do.
If you wait, you can kind of capture some more MEV and more transactions because you're having inbound transactions. Transactions are coming into you. If you wait and delay your proposer, you can kind of steal some MEV from the next guy.
Just skim a little bit off the top.
Yeah, right. You're just collecting more transactions that would otherwise have gone to the next guy in the queue. Okay. And so you're just taking it from them. And this is like a rational economic strategy that these EF researchers were like, yo, this is possible. We are not observing this yet, but this is possible. And this paper was released like half a year ago.
And it's happening now.
Proudly announcing that, yo, we're going to play some timing games and we're going to have a higher yield than our competitors.
Is P2P Oric, what are they? Are they block builders?
You can go stake with them. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. How much ETH stake do they have?
Institutional grade staking solution, $2.5 billion. I'm assuming that is mostly all ETH. Yeah, I think this is Kobe's project, bro. I think Kobe is like one of the founders of this P2P.org. Yeah, another one of the Lido founders. I can't remember Vasily. I can't remember.
But they're able to present, like, give their validators, basically the stakers who stake with them, an edge, right? A bit more yield.
Yes.
A bit more juice.
So like it's dangerous to play timing games because if you wait to propose your block right up to the edge and then you have some sort of latency hiccup, then your block doesn't get proposed and then you get penalized.
Okay.
And so you don't get any money. And so it really benefits people who have better latency and better connectivity, which is why it doesn't really benefit solo stakers. Like if you are somebody who's like P2P, you can wait the maximum amount of time, which is like 4 seconds. Whereas solo stakers can't take that level of risk because they don't have the same connectivity. And so they can only take a few seconds. And so it benefits high connectivity. And then P2P is like, yo, we're going to play timing games. Come stake with us because we're going to get more yield. And it's basically just like, yo, we're going to just take the transactions from the next guy and give it to us. This is generally considered rational, but shitty behavior.
It's a MEV problem, basically.
It's an MEV.
You know, I have a take about that, but I almost don't want to get into this whole take. I think we got to save it for our takes episode, David.
Take the takes? Okay.
Yeah, but
one little bit more of data. 0.0065 ether per second is the price of time on Ethereum block production. So if you wait 1 second, you on average will obtain 0.0065 more ETH.
Here's the problem with this, right? And the tweet frames it as like, we shouldn't tolerate this. Like, don't do that. It's bad behavior, right? I agree with all of that. And yet also, our protocol has to be hardened against that kind of bad behavior.
Right.
Like, again, David and I were just playing at ETH researchers. So like, somebody call the devs. It's not you and I who are going to solve this, but My take is that we can't use these values, like the idea of Ethereum alignment, as a crutch. Right. Because we have to accept that there will be people out there that will cheat, that don't share these types of values. And Ethereum is strongest when it actually harnesses stuff like that, when it harnesses the human greed, when it harnesses the MEV to accomplish its goals. And this is why, like, you and I have been in favor of mechanisms like ultrasound money, right? Yeah. Like, the more ETH we burn, the more numbers should go up, right? More security for everybody. It's an, what does
you take the MEV from the extractors and you give it to the ETH holders. There's a wider pool of people.
Yeah. So give me that greed, all that greed, ETH number go up, like, you know, and then we'll convert that into decentralization. We'll convert that into economic security. Anyway, it's a general observation that I think that it's good to make this visible, but we shouldn't go over the top at, you know, in the crypto community, in the Ethereum community, and wrap people's knuckles and just say, you know, bad builders, bad validators, do not do this. We have to repair it at the mechanism level and at the root.
Yeah, that is the power of crypto economics, that we have the power to do that. Okay, moving on. Ready?
Yeah.
Kyber Network, which is a DeFi liquidity protocol, started in 2017 as an ICO, just been in the background, invisibly providing liquidity. OGs, like, super competent team, been around for a while. Sadly, was exploited for $55 million. $20 million from Kyber on Arbitrum, $15 from Optimism, $7 from the ETH Layer 1. And the exploiter, this is the same exploiter, if you saw this on crypto Twitter, who was like, who exploited Kyber and then wrote this on-chain message saying negotiations will begin after I've had a rest.
Wow, yeah.
People are like, oh, he's just exploiting, now he's going to go take a nap. Yeah. So here are the demands. He wrote this very long on-chain message. It goes to all relevant and or interested parties.
This is the hacker
parties.
Who has that $50 million from Kyber Network.
Yes. To all relevant and or interested parties, I thank you for your attention and patience during this uncertain time for Kyber, as well as the company of Kyber, DAO, you know, DAO and company. Below, I have delineated a treaty for us to agree to. My demands are as follows. Complete executive control over Kyber, the company. Wow. Temporary full authority and ownership over the governance mechanism, Kyber DAO, in order to enact legislative changes. My current wallet address is fine for this. All documents and information related to company and protocol formation, structure, operation, revenues, profits, expenses, assets, liabilities, investors, and salaries, and the surrender of all Kyber, the company assets, both on and off chain. Including but not limited to shares, equity, tokens, partnerships, blogs, websites, servers, passwords, social channels, and any and all creative and intellectual property of Kyber.
What?
He's saying, hey, in order for this money to return, you got to give me the company. Like, I'm the captain now.
This is so stupid. So first of all, whoever this is obviously a complete dick.
Yeah.
But also, like, these are impossible demands to meet.
Like, well, I think technically they would be possible, but he needs to, like,
then he would
sign
get arrested,
documents.
David.
He would get arrested then.
Here's my equity. Where is Kyber organized? It was like a Singapore, a Hong Kong, or something, if I recall correctly. Like, what email address should I send this to? And, like, what name should I put? Oh, here's my name. Like, it's settled in meat space, bro. Like, he doesn't. This is impossible. And I would rather just, like, send the authorities to his house rather than send him legal documents if you know exactly who he is.
And so it's got to be a troll then, right? Like, it's got to be a troll.
It's got to be a troll. So maybe it's a negotiation tactic, but he ends with this. He says, this is my best offer. This is my only offer. I require my demands to be met by December 10th. Otherwise, the treaty falls through, and I guess he keeps the $50 million. I don't think this person's in a good position to negotiate. In so many cases,
most exploiters end up getting in trouble.
It's
trapped. Really hard to hide your tracks.
Yeah, FBI. Somebody hunts them down, finds them. Yeah. Maybe he
strong arms them.
Exist for a while, but, like, how's he actually going to exit these positions? It's going to be tracked, you know, on chain.
Yeah. Anyway, the only thing I can think of is, like, he just threw a big old distraction their way, and he's trying to figure out, like, how to
what his next move is.
Yeah, exactly.
You think some of these hackers, they do the hack and they're like, oh, I caught the car and I don't, like, know what I'm gonna do.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. A dog chases car and catches it. Yeah. Uh-huh. David, we've got some execution layers on the scene. The first one, it's called Movement, I believe. Mm-hmm. What is this?
Yeah, Movement is a move-based layer 2 on Ethereum with Celestia data availability. I think if you're a developer, you really think Move is super cool. I guess. I don't know. Cool programming language, great you know, stuff over there.
good. It's not EVM. It's just like not Solidity, right?
Yeah, it's not Solidity. Yeah, Move is Move like the Facebook language?
I can't. It was. Yeah.
Oh, look at me. Look at this guy. Anyways, Move-based Ethereum layer 2 on the scene got launched with Celesta data availability. That's pretty cool. Also, Say V2. Say is like one of those like big, high-valued like chains that raise a ton of money towards the end
ETH
of last
killers,
cycle.
ETH killers, in quotes.
ETH killers, yeah.
A high TPS thing.
Yeah. And now they're announcing Say V2. Paralyzed EVM. So this is also what Monad does as well.
Parallelized, right?
Parallelized EVM.
Not paralyzed. It's parallelized, right?
Parallelized EVM.
So it happens in parallel. Yes.
Yes. If we could get the parallel EVM to the Ethereum layer 1, that would be super cool. I don't know how much of an engineering lift that is. Anyways.
If we could get that by next week too, guys. Yeah, that'd be great.
Like, that'd be fantastic. And so yeah, some cool new chains. All the chainy stuff. Ready to move on to NFTs?
I
like this one.
I just want to say one more thing. Yeah. I think there's a lot of experiments going on in parallelized EVMs, right? One is this Say thing. It's a layer 2. Another is Monad. We've talked about that before. They're doing like a parallelized EVM that can very high transactions per second. Also,
it's like one of the big things that the Solana people flex about the Solana virtual machine is it's like localized fee markets and parallelization.
Yeah, they've got a great.
This is that for the EVM.
This is that for the EVM, and also Eclipse, who we've brought on before, which are basically doing Solana virtual machine only on a layer 2. Anyway, a lot
also
of cool innovation going there.
Data availability.
Okay, we could talk about NFTs now. Tell me about it, David.
Okay, so Ryan, like the cats. That's a phrase that the cats say. These are the cool cats. They got a big blow up balloon on Macy's Thanksgiving Holiday Day Parade. And I think that's pretty cool.
One of my kids was watching this and she said, Dad, it's a cool cat.
Nice. I was like, they know what a cool cat is?
Yeah, they know what a cool cat is. Yeah.
Oh, cool. We don't have the picture up, but there's a video of Klon, who is the creator of Cool Cats, like doing like a selfie video as he's walking through the cap around him. Yeah, I met him at the Cool Cats meetup in LA when I lived in San Diego. And like, there was 200 people there at this Cool Cats meetup in LA. And like, there was like this cat drawing station and he was just like there just drawing some cats with like some other Cool Cat owners. Like, yeah,
doing it for the art. We're not doing it for the price anymore. We're just doing it because we want to support the art.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool.
David, where in the world is Richard Hart from Hex? I feel like that's an
unsolved
mystery.
Probably trolling someone online.
All right, so we got a block story. It says the SEC is having trouble serving Hex founder Richard Hart with its lawsuit. So
I'm just shocked.
The SEC has some lawsuits for Richard Hart, I guess, and they can't find him. So
he lives in Finland. He lives in Finland. He doesn't live in the United States.
About the location of Richard Hart.
So I would like to know. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Gary Gensler wants to know about that.
So the SEC has said that it underscores the legal hurdles in prosecuting international cases involving digital assets. The Eastern District Court of New York City claims jurisdiction as many of the crypto asset transactions, HEX, herein took place on Uniswap, a so-called decentralized crypto asset trading platform whose developers are headquartered in Brooklyn. Yeah. So
Are they trying to implicate Uniswap here too?
Yes. Yes, they are. So-called decentralized. Those are the words of Elizabeth Warren.
I don't know, man. I don't know who I dislike more. Is it the scammers or some of these kind of regulators that are trying to say, you know,
Uniswap Labs needs to like rename to something else.
What?
Well, because like, the Uniswap,
Are you trying to get into a bankless DAO thing again?
Oh my god,
it's too
I am.
Confusing.
Oh my god, I am. I am doing that.
Can't get it out of my head. Yeah, Uniswap and Uniswap Labs. Are they the same thing? What are they? It's too confusing. How about CZ? He has been ordered to stay in the U.S. for now. I suppose U.S. authorities think he is a flight risk. Right. So they're saying you gotta stay here. You can't leave.
Well, he has a massive amount of wealth. And also where he's from, the UAE has no extradition treaty with the United States. So you put those two things together and they're like, you know what, CZ, you're going to stay here.
And so he is waiting for his court case, right, to actually determine his sentencing, like his jail sentencing. Yes.
Right. How many years, months he will stay in jail, which will happen in like February 20 something.
February, yeah. Okay, wow. So there you go. David, we got a meme of the week to end this weekly roll up. What are we looking at here? Warren?
How? We are looking at an Elizabeth Warren tweet saying, we do not need another private equity deal that could lead to higher food prices for consumers. The FTC is right to investigate whether the purchase of Subway But the same firms that own Jimmy John's and McAllister's Deli are creating a sandwich shop monopoly. And it is a political
article.
This is a serious tweet. Yeah, she is going, she's not only recruiting an anti-crypto army, she's also recruiting an anti-sandwich shop monopoly army as well. Yuga Daif, who works at Coinbase, who goes, Senator, as one of your constituents, I would like to thank you for your tough stance on sandwich shops. These crumb jugglers have been wreaking havoc in our communities for too long. The election will be decided by issues of bread and fill, and I'm happy to see you understand that.
Oh my gosh, that is great. That is what Elizabeth Warren is spending her time on. Hey, better sandwiches than crypto. I think mm-hmm. she's maybe more productive over there, that's for sure. All right, we're gonna end with risks in a minute, but first we disclose neither David nor myself have ever held the token called HEX. Important disclosure there, but we do own ETH.
Why is that in the disclosure?
It's an anti-disclosure.
Put that in there.
I thought it'd be funny. Maybe it's not. Risk and disclaimers. Guys, crypto is risky. You definitely lose what you put in, but so are sandwich shops and delis. We are headed west. This is the frontier. It's not for everyone, but we're glad you're with us on the Bankless journey. Thanks a lot.